Happy Thursday, and welcome again to another edition of Husker Online Headlines. Sean Callahan, Steve Sipple with you here every week as we dissect through the biggest headlines around Husker Nation. Now, Steve Sipple didn't wear the bowling shirt today.
How about?
You thought about busting out the orange.
I did. That'll be next week.
Save it for the trip to Tennessee.
No, it'll be next week.
You're going to wear the orange shirt next week. All right. I'm excited.
Tuesday.
Super Saver bought as well, right?
I didn't buy it. A friend bought them. But I noticed when I was in Super Saver one day, I was like, oh, that's where he got them. There was just a bin, like a, you know, it looked like a something you'd put extra Oreo cookies in. And I saw it. I noticed the shirt torn. And I was like, oh, that's where he got them. They're cheap. Cheap. Like that's $5.
Us talking about it too. I had a lot of people ask me about that shirt. So
it's a good looking shirt.
It's got some street credit already.
Yeah, they're actually not bad. I mean, I dry cleaned them. There's one that's maroon. It's maroon with a yellow stripe, and that's cool. I mean, it's hard to wear.
I mean, I've known you a long time. I've never known you to go to the dry cleaner.
I do more than you think. I don't like to wear good shirts without then the next time I wear them. Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
You learned something new about Steve Sipple, even after 20 plus years. Yeah. All right, let's get into the show so let's talk some ball as headline number one, QBs take center stage. We heard from quarterbacks Dylan Raiola, Daniel Kalen, the true freshman, and then last year's returning starter Heinrich Harburg, along with Marcus Satterfield, Glenn Thomas. They spoke to the media on Thursday, and everybody talked for about 8 minutes each. I would say it wasn't a lot of big headlines that came out of it. I mean,
it's five practices in, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting to me, though, Rule was okay with wanting those guys out there right away.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, and it was, they put Heinrich to the podium first among the quarterbacks, then Daniel, and then Dylan Raiola. And no, they didn't say anything profound at all. Not really at all. I thought the most interesting thing came from Satterfield, actually, is that they're really focusing on the passing game. They got to get better in the passing game. Glenn Thomas said they're not even looking for separation among those quarterbacks right now. They're just trying to get them a lot of reps. No, there's not anything juicy.
You know what we learned, though? What? Daniel Kalen's not going to prom.
Yeah. I wonder why.
You'd think there'd be a few girls that want to attend prom with Daniel Kalen.
They'd still do proms. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he just wants to stay here and work.
But yeah, Dylan Raiola. By the way, guess who I saw in the facility working out on his own? Dayton Raiola.
Dominic's here.
Yeah, so the Raiolas are around. And
Dayton was there.
Young Dayton, yeah, who we spent a good amount of time around in at Kamehameha High School in Honolulu when we were out there for the game.
Great kid.
He is a wonderful kid. And just he's on a spring break, all smiles.
He's just working out. You know, like what Dominic says is that this is like a resort. Not the post office we're in. The football facility at Nebraska, all of it, the Hawks Center, the stadium, the new training facility. He says it's like a resort, and that Dylan regards it that way. I got this football resort, and I'm going to make the most of it.
Your new shirt, you kind of dress like you're at a resort when you're over there.
Yeah. I'm going to get a few more of those shirts.
You're at a resort, the Husker football resort with your new shirts. I'm going to work this. I'm going to get you a sponsorship on some shirts.
That'd be great. I have some pretty good ones that are not from the Super Saver bin, but they need to be cleaned up a little bit.
But back to the Raiola, you know, he's up there, and he was ready for the moment.
I mean, he was.
And he didn't say anything out of line. And all three quarterbacks were really respectful to one another. We know they're close. It's a small room, too. I mean, I think what intrigues me the most about this spring is you're seeing two true freshmen get legitimate reps with the ones and the twos. And that just doesn't happen. In fact, you know, you think about early enrollee freshmen. I don't know if that's really ever happened at all at Nebraska. Like Kurt Dukes, when he came here way back in the day, I don't think he was immediately taking one reps.
I don't think so.
And so for what these kids are getting, I'm trying to think of other early.
Frazier. Oh, I don't know if he early enrolled.
No, Kurt Dukes was the first early enrollee in school history.
I'm sorry. Okay.
That didn't become a thing until Chris Leak did it at Florida.
Okay.
Chris Leak was one of the first ones. Kurt Dukes was in that era. That's when
it didn't get Dukes ready.
No,
it didn't. He wasn't ready. He wasn't when they called upon him that season. He wasn't ready.
But you think about, there's been some early enroll, like Cody Spano was an early enrollee quarterback.
Cody Spano.
I'm trying to think of some other high school ones. We've had some over the years for sure. But these guys are getting legit reps. And I think what that does is when you work with those number one receivers, backs, offensive line, you're going to get a better idea of how good they are. Where, you know, normally when a new quarterback comes in, they got to work with the twos and the threes and the lower units. And you don't have as clear of a picture of them because they don't have the good players around them.
Yeah, they're going to get a clear. Now, this is a necessity. They only have three scholarship quarterbacks. So three scholarship quarterbacks on camp, on campus. Matt Rhule said to us to start the spring when he was asked about what are the expectations for the freshmen. What'd he say, Sean?
I mean, to get them ready.
To be ready to start. He said that doesn't mean they will start, but they need to be ready to start.
And Kalen, you know, is extremely smart and mature for a kid that's right out of high school.
He really is. He was great at the podium. That's the thing about these two freshmen. They do seem older. That's the kind of the way freshmen are now anyway, right? Particularly quarterbacks who have been, I mean, they do so much. He was in Elite 11. Dylan was in the All-Star game in Hawaii. They come here ready to go. They don't look like they're physically overwhelmed, especially not Dylan. I mean, look at Dylan. Look at him at the podium. 6'3", 225. Daniel Kalen,
and I think
he's got size.
I think he could be bigger than 225. When you look at him, I mean, he looks...
His head looks like it weighs 225. I
mean, his body's put together.
Yeah, he's a big dude. He's a big dude.
He's got body armor.
Yeah, he's kind of imposing, actually. And Daniel Kalen's got good size, too. So, you know, can they handle it all? Only time will tell. I hate to say that, but it's true.
Harburg, too, is an interesting spring story, how he kind of bounces back. And, you know, he beat himself to holy hell last year. And that's what I asked him about today. I'm like, look.
Oh, he
like,
said it.
What did you learn? Like, he knows he can't really get away with playing the way he did. Like, I remember football people I knew, the first game or two when he was like lowering his shoulder, everyone's just kind of like, that ain't going to last. Right?
And it didn't. It didn't last.
Well, I felt like
he got banged up.
The Purdue game was the first game where he really, I mean, they scouted him well. And those edge players
hammered him.
Scourton and the other one just beat him up.
Yeah, the two edge guys got him. The safety got him down near the goal line big time. And he said he still wants to be a physical downhill runner, but he has to pick his spots. It'll be different for him. And he also talked about his elbow. I mean, they always talk about that elbow, how it dropped.
And Michigan had that scouted.
And how that led to balls being batted at the line of scrimmage or tipped at the line of scrimmage. They talk about that elbow drop all the time, which is something you could eyeball from the press box. Fans talked about it. You see his elbow drop.
He was a baseball player growing up.
Yeah.
And he throws it like a middle infielder sometimes.
Sometimes he does. You're right.
And Michigan.
Good point, Sean.
You know what they, you know, on those quick throws to the flats where you're not going to get a pass rush in there. That's when they jumped up and knock them down. And you saw a lot of Big Ten teams do it. Look, this Big Ten has some of the best defenses in the country, and they're going to have that stuff scouted out.
Well, some of the best coaches in the country.
So, like, that kind of stuff, like, you've got to improve on that. And it's hard. To change how you do things is not easy.
Of course it's not. Now, as far as Daniel and Kalen go, or excuse me, as far as Dylan and Kalen go, Dylan said his toughest adjustment has been the old cliche, speed of the game. Nothing there. Nothing that would not surprise anybody. Kalen said it was the playbook, that the playbook is thick and that the check, there's a lot of check calls. So those are the things that are challenging them. I get it with Rayola and the speed of the game. I mean, he's kind of a smooth operator. And at times you can't be a smooth operator in college football. Sometimes watch Caleb Williams. It's not always smooth, because there's a pass rush and it's just a different world. than high school football. So the one thing I will watch for Dylan, watch with Dylan is that he adjusts to that. It's not always going to be a situation where he can be calm. It's got to speed up for him.
Yeah, that is one. I mean, a great point too. Like, we've never really seen a high stressed version of Dylan Raiola.
Thank you. And that's a great way to put
and
it.
It's hard to, and can Matt Rhule create that in practice?
You bet he can. He will.
Like, I want to see, I mean, if I'm Matt Rhule,
I do it every day.
I want to see Dylan get frustrated.
I do
him,
it every day.
I want to see him get pissed. I want to see how he reacts.
I put him under duress.
And because that's reality.
That's the reality. Like, that is 100%.
What's not reality is not getting touched, wearing a green jersey, and running practice like a walkthrough. You have to stress these guys.
Yeah, they will. They'll get stressed.
And that's what spring's for. So I think that will be a number one goal. All right.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Before we take it to headline number two, Husker Online Headlines is brought to you by Eller Brock Norris. Eller Brock Norris has been helping Nebraska business owners protect their purpose for over 120 years. With risk management solutions built for local businesses, Eller Brock Norris partners with you on commercial insurance, group benefits, business exit planning, safety, and more. Start thinking long-term with your business and create a risk management strategy to protect it. Are your employee benefits costs going through the roof? Talk to Eller Brock. Workplace injuries skyrocketing, your workers' compensation costs? Talk to Eller Brock. Hoping you retire in the next 10 years and sell the business to a family, key employees, or even a friendly competitor? Talk to Eller Brock. Eller Brock Norris is helping you protect your purpose, whether it's your business and the employees in it, your life outside of work, or your future retirement goals. Head to ellerbrock-norris.com/Husker Online today to get your free risk evaluation. Thank you again to Eller Brock Norris for sponsoring us here on the Husker Online Show. Okay, headline number two, Marcus Satterfield's in his new role as the tight ends coach, but still the offensive coordinator, still the play caller, and you get the sense this feels a little bit more what Matt Rhule wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, last year they had to bring in Bob Wager. I don't think Bob Wager necessarily was a part of the original plans, as we know. And then Bob Wager quickly had his incident happen where he was out of the picture. They had to kind of reshuffle things and whatnot. And, you know, the tight end room didn't have, they lost their coach like the week of fall camp starting, and Satterfield had to manage all that and manage the offense. Now he's got Glenn Thomas. And now he's running that tight ends room as well. And you get the sense he's really comfortable in this role.
Oh, my God. You really do. He said he loves it. He did say the word, I love this role. He gets to balance coaching tight ends who are heavily involved with running an entire offense. He did say they are focusing on the passing game. So here's the thing. He's still working with quarterbacks. We know who's in charge of him. It's not him. It's Glenn Thomas. But he still has to work with, still gets to work with them. So, yeah, he's got a good deal. Plus, he's got a good tight end room. He talked about a lot of stuff today. He was good. Of the five people who appeared on the podium today at the Hawks Championship Center, Satterfield was easily the most revealing. He talked about the running back room and said he did say Dante Dowdell looks good. He says he's very, very, very physical runner. We'll see on all that. I'm not jumping forward on Dante Dowdell. I'm not.
Yeah, we got. I mean,
I'm not.
I've been doing this. Yeah, I say I've been doing this long enough to know that usually every player gets a positive praise this time of year, but we've heard some negative ones already.
Yeah, Emmett Johnson. He said Ramir Johnson's practicing evidently,
and Gabe Irvin Jr. out.
Right.
But You know, he's been playing a lot of football here. I wrote today, I think we'll see a bounce back season from Gabe Urban Jr.
Okay, I like that.
And I got challenged. I mean, of course, people on the board challenged my prediction there, but I think when healthy, and that's the key, can he stay healthy?
Yeah.
He's very effective.
Oh, I go back to Colorado. I go back to the Colorado game. Nebraska was starting to heat up because he heated up. And I thought when they got him heated up, remember, I think it was the second quarter, we were saying, okay, I think they're going to be okay here. And then it went south because the quarterback went south for Nebraska.
What I like is the schedule. And he
went south for good, by the way. He's back
down. I think for him, there's a schedule to develop him better now.
Yeah.
Instead of having, you know, his whole career, he's opened on the road against Power 5 to start the year. If he can just develop some confidence early, I think he could take off. I really do.
All right, Sean. Hold me to that. Yeah, I will hold you to it. Don't forget about Ramir Johnson either. And don't forget about Demetrius Bell. He got mentioned at least twice today. Demetrius Bell.
As a wide receiver.
Yeah, number 11, 6 foot. He's a littler guy, 6 foot 175 from Nashville. But Satterfield mentioned him, and so did.
All right, hold that though. I want to talk about some playmakers in the scrimmage to watch going forward.
Dylan mentioned him too.
Yeah, the Satterfield though, back to this role though. Also, be curious when this coaching rule that we assume is going to pass to allow unlimited bodies. You know, can they beef up even more, like with quarterback instructional people and other people behind the scenes as on-field coaches?
I wonder what they do there. If they hire a backup quarterbacks coach, like a number two quarterbacks coach. I don't know if you need to do that or not.
Well, Adam DeMichael, you know, was a former quarterback and is a quarterback expert already on the staff, and he's got experience. So
maybe you would.
Does he elevate to on field?
I don't know.
Played quarterback at Temple.
I don't think any of that is a given. There's some coaches that will load up the staff. Some won't. I don't know what rule.
Yeah, you could have two. I mean, there's a scenario where you could have too many cooks in the kitchen.
100%, Sean. So, what will that look like? And by the way, while we're on that topic, I heard yesterday, I know you hate it when I do this because this is tunnel talk material, but it's going through, and it'll probably be through by June 1. June 1 is when that new legislation will be in place.
Okay, think about this. How many Power 5 schools are there? What, 65?
In that neighborhood.
If every Power 5 school is able to add about 10 more on-field coach bodies, that's 650 more jobs.
That's good. It's good. It's good for the coaching industry. It's good for the players. It's good for the product. The product we watch on Saturdays. More coaching should equate to better play.
Yeah, they've always said with football, the teacher to student ratio is the worst of all the sports.
Right.
Like the sport has been held back because of the equity that people try to create that doesn't really exist.
Not anymore. So this rule is going. I mean, I think at this point, Sean, it's a formality.
Well, and if you're the other teams, why would you upset the top of the game? Because you need the top of the game to give you those paychecks. The lower part of college football exists because of the paychecks they get to play SEC and Big Ten teams.
Yeah, that's part of it.
And when those teams break off someday, which will probably happen eventually, that money's gone.
Yeah.
So those lower teams can't really continue to resist and try to act like they're equals. They're not.
That's such a hard conversation.
It's real. It's reality. And they're still going to get a playoff spot.
Don't yell at me.
In the group of five.
Yeah. It sucks. It does. That's not the college football that I will. It's really too bad.
You know? Yeah, but if you just had like a normal blue collar job and you drive by the neighborhood of mansions, like that's not fair. Is that not fair? I mean, that's just reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like as much as we try to create this equal balance, it doesn't exist in any form of life.
Not really.
You know, really. The people that have more resources.
Well, I don't expect it to be equal, but I still like having those schools to be part of the scene.
And I think they are, but by them not holding this back, you know, helps their cause probably. Because if they upset the top schools, this is another thing that said, hey, we're just going to leave you guys.
Yeah.
We won't schedule you anymore. We're just going to leave you guys.
Right.
And some of those teams make $2 million to come play a game like this.
Yeah.
And they need that money.
Mm-hmm.
And they need that.
Absolutely.
They need that playoff money.
Right.
They need all the money that the power schools drop down to them. Mm-hmm. And if they lose that money, there's a lot more teams that won't be able to play football.
Right.
So it is an interesting discussion. All right, let's take it to headline number three. Scrimmage time. So we assume
scrimmage
Steve
time.
Sipple and I, yes. That Saturday we will see a scrimmage. Now we won't see it, but 1,000 local high school coaches will.
Yeah.
And an army of parents and former players will probably be there too. So I'm just going to guess that there'll be about 1,200 people at that scrimmage.
So we'll know about it,
but we're not mature enough as media to watch it.
Easy. We'll know.
I get it. I mean, and I think they're pretty strict about, like, I saw one of the recruits going into practice and he told his mom, put your phone away, no phones out, no pictures, no videos of practice. So, I mean, clearly they don't want stuff getting out of those practices or
something. God, it's got to be interesting though. I mean, that's, here we go with the quarterback talk. I mean, what do you want to know first? How Dylan Raiola look?
I'll make some predictions. Right? The scrimmage will be probably sloppy on offense.
Usually is. Yeah.
And the defense will have a significantly upper hand.
Yep. Usually that's the case.
I mean, if that's not the case, then you're usually worried about your defense.
Right. So I'd be watching, obviously, the quarterbacks, but also the offensive line. How's the offensive line holding up? They get a big challenge, and a couple of the guys mentioned it today. They get a big challenge from this defense. It is very real, that discussion of the defense giving different looks every play. It is huge for the offense. It's big for these young quarterbacks to go up against Tony White's defense. I was skeptical of that conversation. Like, come on, how difficult could it be? But Ethan Piper is the one who convinced me that the former Nebraska offensive lineman, said lining up against it every day in practice was an enormous mental challenge. Because I don't know exactly what the challenge is, except they change looks every play.
Identifying that fourth rusher. Okay. So in a 3-3-5, you have to identify who's the fourth.
Who's coming.
And maybe the fifth
or
the sixth. But ideally, you have four people always rushing, and you don't know who the fourth is in the 3-3-5.
Yeah, so it's real. And, God, that's great news. It's great news because these young quarterbacks have to think. It's a mental challenge. Good. That's beautiful. That helps. That helps.
Put him in some high stress.
Him in some high stress situations.
I asked Dylan this about the green, and he didn't know.
They are wearing green now.
Right. I know Matt Rhule wants these guys to get hit, but I have a hard time thinking they're going to allow a lot of contact on these quarterbacks.
Well, the acid test is during the scrimmage, right? Wouldn't you be tempted, Sean, to pull it off for about 10 plays each? I'd be tempted.
Well, and then the one thing, the QB run game, when the QB runs, that's
gone.
That's when you want, like Heiner Carberg where you just can touch him and bring him down. That's not an accurate picture.
Do you think they'll run? That's a very interesting conversation. When people say, how's this offense going to look different? It'll look way different because there's not going to be a QB run game. I mean, not unless Heinrich wins the job. And then even with Heinrich, I think they'll knock it back quite a bit.
Yeah, Kalen and Raiola are two guys that will check it down.
Yeah, they're not going to run those guys.
That's something, honestly, Sip, if you look back at quarterbacks in recent history, Nebraska's quarterbacks have struggled a lot with checkdowns. You know, they decide to run it instead.
That's got to change.
And, you know, Adrian got better at it, but he wasn't a great checkdown thrower at times.
No, he wasn't.
Tommy was not.
No.
I mean, you go down and Taylor got better over his career, but
Sam Keller was the best.
Sam Keller helped Marlon Lucky break the school record in receptions because of checkdowns.
Yeah, Sam Keller was a checkdown master. He was.
He might have been one of the best checkdown quarterbacks. I mean, that's all he did. I mean, he wasn't that bad. People made it out. He wasn't terrible.
No, he wasn't terrible. But anyway.
Joe Gans would have different
words. They're talking about like the quick passing game now. They didn't run much quick passing game last year. I think that's because they're not going to run the quarterback as much.
Well, and also the size of the receivers last year.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to throw it out quick, you want guys
like Jamal Banks
or Naor.
Yeah, or Naor.
Or a mature version of Malachi Coleman with more seasoning.
We're talking 6'3", 215.
That can break a tackle.
Yeah.
And get you 6 yards.
Yep. Absolutely.
I mean, think about like some of the receivers, and like Nate Swift and Todd Peterson, like that 08 year, they weren't the fastest guys, but they knew how to get open, and they were very consistent to get like 6 yards on those quick throws.
And sometimes those can turn into big plays. You heard Dylan say that today, that they're, he feels good about the way they're producing big plays. And I asked him, so what are we talking about, the deep ball? And he said, no. He said it's a lot of times it's short passes that turn into big games.
Because it tests those corners to tackle.
Yeah.
And they have to be consistent with that tackling. So scrimmage Saturday is the thought right now today. All right. Headline number 4. We heard from Scott Frost for the first time this week. Dennis Dodd from CBS, based out of Kansas City, was out in Phoenix. And he had a sit-down interview with Frost. And, you know, the story, I think that one of the parameters was he was not going to talk about Nebraska.
Pretty clear.
Which I think that's the smart move, because no matter what you say about Nebraska, if you're Scott Frost, it's not going to come off good.
No, and some people would be critical of the writer for entering into a deal like that. But if you don't, you don't get the interview. And you don't get Scott Frost saying that he's dying. I'm glad Dennis put that in his tweet, that Scott is dying for a chance to coach again. I thought that was really that was his first quote of the story, and that was the proper quote to lead with. It's interesting to hear 49-year-old Scott Frost, after being away 2 years, after watching 52 head coaching jobs open, 52 since he's been a head coach have opened. He didn't get him. He didn't get it. Not that he would have been interested in all 52, but now he wants to be a coach. That was the dying part, was illuminating to me, and as was a little bit, he said, I'd be happy to be a coordinator.
It's amazing what he wrote, though, about Frost winning. It was the Broyles Award, the National Coach of the Year at Central Florida.
The assistant coach. But he did win.
He won the National Coach of the Year Award, whatever that one's called.
Yeah.
And he can't get a sniff.
Well, now hold on. I don't know that that's true. I think he's gotten some sniffs. I know he got one for sure.
Well, I know he was at UAB.
Right.
He talked
to UAB. That's a sniff.
He went down there.
That's a sniff.
And, you know, I think Florida Atlantic was on his radar, but,
yeah,
you know, obviously he probably has his eyes set on something with, you know, in the upper groups.
I think so, but is that realistic? A head coaching job at a Power 5 school for Scott Frost to a 16-31 in Nebraska? 16-31, Sean. Mike Riley was 19-19.
I think
Frost was 16-31.
I think his path back, though, is finding a good coordinator job somewhere.
Okay, maybe. I think his path back might be going to be a quarterback's coach, assistant quarterback's coach. Just get in somewhere. If I were Frosty, I wouldn't be too picky.
And with this new rule,
yeah,
there'll be opportunities.
I think so. I think so. I would hope so. I mean, if he doesn't get in now under the parameters that you laid out earlier, 650 new jobs just in the power conferences or so, let's just say it's 500 new jobs. He can't get into that with his resume?
With his connection to Ryan Day and Chip Kelly.
You think Ohio State would be an option?
Ohio State, you would think, would have something for him to be involved.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make sense. But again, you get the sense him and his family are not interested in leave Phoenix. They love it there. So,
well, you wonder if he'd be the type of coach that would just go work and his wife would stay. And that happens more than people know. Happens a lot.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. Because it's, look, the shelf life of a coach now, it's lucky to be 4 years.
It's a wicked profession.
Like,
it's a wicked profession.
That's why the Bo Pelini staff, I mean, you had guys like John Papuchis here, what, 7 seasons? I mean, that's unheard of now.
Yeah.
I
don't know about unheard of, but it's more rare than it has been.
It's really rare.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I mean, the odds of the guy that recruited you being at the school that you're at, it's pretty tough. It's not as high anymore.
No, you're right. So what will become of Scott? I don't know. I would think he can get back in, though. In some capacity, I think Nebraska fans are interested. I'm not suggesting all would cheer for him, but I think they'll always be interested in his whereabouts.
Knowing him like we do, I bet he's just bored out of his mind right now.
Well, he has an active mind. He's extremely intelligent. Now I say active mind. What the hell does that mean? He's always trying something, you know? So yeah, I guarantee you, come on, he's 49 years old. He's been in football all his life. He said he's always had a next step. He was a player. Then he was a grad assistant. Then he was an assistant. And then he was a coordinator. Then he was a head coach. It's always been next step, next step, next step. Steps ran out. Happens too. Peter Principle got him. I mean, Peter Principle got Bill Callahan. He was just probably moved one step too high. I think Frost, what I hope is what you kind of alluded to, is that he will become a coordinator. Now, I don't know if he'll start in.
Or a QB's coach.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll start back as a coordinator, but maybe the path would be just get on as a QB's coach or a receiver's coach and then work your way into a coordinator role. You still have time, although at 49 o'clock, the clock's ticking fast now.
Yeah, I think it's clear, though, he's not interested to be like a head coach at UTEP.
I don't think so.
I don't think that's like what it's either be a coordinator at a quality Power 5 opportunity and then use that to kind of maybe move up back into the game. And he's got to be hungry because, I mean, this job, I mean, tarnished him as a coach.
Tarnished his legacy, his coaching legacy. And he still has time to kind of spruce that up, to refurbish his legacy.
Yeah, and he didn't talk anything about Nebraska, but it would have been interesting to hear his thoughts on the Trev Alberts time and some of the things that happened here in Lincoln, particularly because he was on the ground floor of a lot of these things.
He was. But he has no one to blame but himself.
No, though. You're right.
I mean, he was disappointing. I think at his core, he would admit that. He just had a very disappointing tenure here. How could you say it any other way? He was 16-31. I mean, you got to go back to Bill Jennings in the 50s and early 60s, Sean, to find a record that bad.
And there were a group of hardcore people back in that 2022 season that really thought that we should have been writing he should be fired when they were 3-9.
The 2022 season.
Oh, the 21 season. I'm
excuse me. Yeah, 2021 season. Yeah.
And, you know, all those games, they lost close games. And, you know, they took Michigan down on the wire, who was in the college
football. Hey, listen, I wrote a column after the Purdue game when they lost at home that was pretty critical of Frost. And I got hammered by the other side that said, you're being too hard on Scott. Remember when they lost to Purdue? I hammered him pretty good in that column and got a lot of flack from people that said, you got to get off it. What's your deal? Get off Frost's back. So you hear it both sides, but you're right. And we thought, hey, it's going to play out in 2022, one way or the other.
It played out quickly.
And then it played out quickly. That's what I would say to people who try to push that narrative on you and I and others. 2021, if I would have called for Scott's head, there would have been a lot of people angry at me. There would have been a lot of people pissed at in the Nebraska fans.
I think everybody wanted, before they ended it and pulled the plug, they wanted to make sure.
Exactly.
And the way they played in 21, taking Ohio State deep in the fourth quarter.
Late in the season.
They were tied with Michigan in the last minute of the game.
Right.
I mean, every game was close. So I think a lot of people are like, okay, they played the toughest. I mean, they played eight teams that won 9 or 10 or more games.
Right. I guarantee you, if you would have called for his head at the, you know, at the close to the tail end of that season, it would have caused a lot of problems for you. I mean, it would have. There would have been people that agreed, but there have been a lot of people that disagreed. I thought you let it play out, and it played, like you said, it played out very quickly in 2022.
And I don't think Trev in 21 was necessarily ready to go through that kind of
search. I don't think he was.
He was only a few months on the job.
Right.
And I think in 22, he had plenty of time.
He had his ducks in a row.
He had months to get Matt Rhule lined up.
Right. So the stat that you have to mention in this conversation is Scott was 4-21 in games decided by 7 or fewer points. That's the critical stat. 4-21 in games decided by 7 or fewer. He couldn't get over the hump. I thought he didn't do a good job addressing special teams out of the gate. If you remember what a debacle it was at the kicker position. I thought one of the things that really hurt Scott out of the gate was he would maybe hammer me for saying this, but I just thought he had a kind of a blasé attitude about special teams. He didn't even know who the kickers were. I mean, it did that. Now he got better. They got better at special teams. He after he was under the gun, you know, after he was under the gun.
Yeah, that 21 out of 25 games. It's using a gambling analogy. It'd be like playing blackjack and having like the odds winning cards and losing 21 out of 25 times.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
I mean, it's hard to do.
It is.
It's hard to do.
It's not just bad luck, though. I mean, you saw the games. They were coming up short for reasons.
I mean, think about Colorado in 2019. You had two-thirds of that stadium. You're up 17-3 at half. You played probably the two best quarters of the Frost era.
And then what happened?
And then you open the third quarter with a delay of game penalty. You get the football.
Yeah.
You got that stadium. I mean, this fan base is ready to explode.
It was.
In Colorado, and to take over that place. And then it flipped to the point where you had, as you would say, grown men grabbing their junk and flipping off Nebraska fans.
It was an ugly scene.
Oh.
Memorable.
But they start the third quarter with a delay of game. And then from there, it was just like they allowed that flea flicker. I mean, but those moments just haunted Frost. The Michigan State misfire on the rugby punt.
Those were the two big ones. Colorado, the loss there where they blew the big lead. And I'll never forget the rugby punt as long as I live. I rarely am amazed by anything anymore, but I couldn't believe that. That the punter missed his mark by 30 yards.
Michigan State had not gotten a first down the entire second half, and they lost the game.
Because of that punt. Because that guy had an open field to run it back on. The punter missed his mark.
Well, he was hurt, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whatever. But somehow, and I just remember, we have such a great view at these stadiums from above, and you just saw it unfold. It was just like, oh, my God. They have nobody to tackle.
It was kind of like when you just catch a punt in warmups and there's no one around you. Like that's how that
kind of was like. Yeah. It's like they're going to lose this game.
Then he had a 20 yard head of steam to start running before you could get to him.
Oh, I hate to say this, but it was breathtaking to watch, like in a bad way. You're like, they're going to lose this game.
The guy that called that punt play was Ross Ells, former Husker assistant coach, Lincoln native.
He was coaching at Michigan
State. He was special teams coordinator.
Yeah.
Ted Gilmore was the receivers coach.
That's wonderful.
But all right. Enough down memory lane.
Memory lane.
Final headline. Headline five. Kind of lost in the headlines. Bill Belichick is in Lincoln this week for the coaches clinic. And, you know, credit to Matt Rhule and his staff. They've put together a great clinic this weekend. In fact, I'm told they've got, you know, this coaching clinic back in the day would draw 1,200 coaches. And, you know, over the years, it had dropped down to maybe 300-400.
Oh, God, really?
And they're pushing 800 plus this weekend. So they've done a really good job of kind of revitalizing this coaching clinic and getting a speaker like Bill Belichick in here this weekend, who, by the way, spoke for the Pelini era as well.
He did.
It's cool to see that.
Yeah, so these coaches are high school coaches and small college coaches.
Mostly high school.
I've seen JUCOs.
Yeah, but you don't get like you get some, but those guys are usually in their own spring practices.
Yeah. So it is a big thing. It's a big you do give Matt credit for getting somebody like Belichick in here. That's special for these guys to be able to listen to his presentation. I believe it'd be on Friday night, right?
Yeah, and the coaching clinics they're as much as talking ball in the facility, the fellowship is important too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, for a lot of these guys, it's getting out of the house for the weekend with the other coaches, talking football, having a few beers. That's what the clinic's about for guys.
Those coaches will tell you story after story where, you know, there's these high school coaches have their own high school coaches that they admire. And they can, they literally can sit down and
go to the bar with them.
Yeah, eatery and just pluck their brain. And it's a beautiful thing. Bunch of guys talking ball. And you know what's going to happen too. It happened last year. Rhule shows up for these things and he'll talk to those guys just in a very casual setting.
And he makes himself very real. I was in Omaha when Rhule first got hired at the Metro coaches meeting. I was invited to go listen to Rhule and the staff, and Rhule gets up and talks, and he announced his personal cell phone number out loud to like 300 coaches in the room that if anyone ever needed a call, and this is my number.
Wow. Wow. See, that's Rhule. He's like that.
Now he said it one time really quick. So you had to be quick on it, but I don't know if I've never seen a head coach just do that
No, and he means it too, and he will be accessible. And I would say not every head coach is, or there some are more accessible than others. And he's high end accessible.
Yeah, I mean the times that we've had to reach out to him on anything, I mean his response time is as quick as anyone I've dealt with in any form of life.
He's high end accessible.
Like he responds if it's on it, if it's important, he responds. Like he's a very dialed in leader as far as, you know, running this program.
He is the antithesis of me. I'm often on airplane mode.
I've been noticing you do that lately.
I do that a lot.
You just shut down the world. You're like 1987 mode on.
That's exactly right. That's
2024 mode.
Yeah, I don't almost go. You can go back a little further, and I go about 1977 mode. Back when there were no cell phones, you went on vacation, you'd have to give somebody the hotel number, you know.
My in-laws have a friend of theirs who he might have a cell phone now, but literally like within the last year or two, he never had a cell phone. It was his way when he got out of the house, like they couldn't track him down. I mean,
I don't advocate that.
Well, when you I'll never forget.
Put it on airplane mode.
You first got a cell phone in the early days of Cricket Wireless.
I had a Cricket.
Like if you crossed like county lines, you lost service. Yeah. You're out. Like
it was beautiful.
Like you'd go out of town to Texas and your phone was.
Sorry. Yeah. It was beautiful.
Well, then that's when you had to get people's room numbers and you call them in their hotel rooms.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are better days. Those are much better times, Sean.
I remember like you could get a hold of people, like important people in their hotel rooms. When I was a producer for 1620 The Zone, you know, back in my early days, like we'd get guests on and I knew where like Iowa State was staying in Boise after the NCAA tournament. I just called Larry Eustace's hotel room. Larry Eustace answered his phone, came on our show.
Better times.
Yeah, it was easy. I mean, I remember Gene Stevens, the Wichita State baseball coach. They were playing Nebraska in a regional or something like that. And I knew they were staying, called his room.
Yeah. And you'd also do the home phone thing too. Sometimes it was surprising, which there were coaches you'd be shocked at that they would publish their number.
Like Milt Tenneper, I called him on his home phone a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a good example of that.
Like in the spring, there wasn't like this crazy kind of access we get now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you needed to talk to Milt, you just called him on his home line.
Yeah. Yeah. It was in the phone book. The phone book. There used to be a phone book.
They still bring one out.
Good, do they?
It's little.
Really?
I mean, I can't say I use it, but they bring one out, yeah.
I need to see one of those just to make me happy.
We got to pay to go into it, so I don't think there's a lot of numbers in there anymore.
Probably not.
But yeah, those were the days where you could just track down people that way. It was easy. Like Dave Van Horn, I'll never forget, too, when we were doing the shows in the peak of Nebraska baseball as they just started to get good. We had Dave Van Horn's cell number.
Really?
And I was working for Gary Java, not Kevin Kugler yet, doing his shows back then. And we were calling Dave on his cell phone to get him on Omaha radio. And he was like in a meeting with Bill Byrne negotiating a new contract. And he's like, hey, Sean, I'm in a meeting with Bill Byrne. We'll have to call. Can you call me back? I mean, it just was a different time.
Different time. All right, Sean, let's wrap it up.
All right. Geez, you got to go.
I don't have to go. We're out of topics.
We're kind of squeezing the lemon.
Yes.
All right.
We're squeezing the lemon.
Plenty of great coverage on HuskerOnline.com. Check us out. All the spring football coverage. We got great baseball coverage this weekend. We got a promo as well. Get you 2 months of access for $1. It's promo code NU1. It's the best deal you're going to get. Promo NU1. We'll get you 2 months for $1 for Steve Sipple. I'm Sean Callahan signing off here for another edition of Husker Online Headlines.